Good day, ladies and gentlemen. In the last sessions, in the prior sessions, we surveyed the benefits, costs, risks, and risk reductions mechanisms in business trusting relationships. In this session, we focus on issues concerning the internet. Because building trust on the internet is in the making, we can only speculate on how the process will mature. I believe that the principles that we have studied in our discussions help understand the current process and help us predict where it will end in. I think that commercial and financial institutions and governments have recognized the benefits of internet communications to sellers, to buyers of products and services. The breathtaking reach of the internet offers a quantum leap in communication all over the world. But as compared to real space, relationships through the internet pose for buyers and sometimes for the sellers increased costs and increased risks. For buyers, there are higher costs of verifying the products and services they obtain through the internet. There's a higher risk from misinformation. It is technically easier to show on the internet items that look real but are not. There's less information about the stores and manufacturing facilities of the product. In real space, you can judge a store by the place it is located in, by the way it is kept, by the people who visit the store. On the internet, you can get a view of a beautiful store. It doesn't exist. There's also less information about people. People can hide their personalities. They can create different personalities. There's no body language. The voice signals can't guide you. In addition, buyers are exposed to higher risks from the payment process through credit cards, and especially debit cards. Therefore, the internet requires, number one, either more trusting relationships among sellers and buyers, or number two, more verifications of facts and promises of each party. In fact, this last verification leads to a more trusting of those who provide that. One more general point. It seems that allocation of costs and risks between buyers and sellers seems to have changed. Buyers are exposed to more costs and more risks, but they have alternatives to buy in real space, even though they lose the convenience and choices of internet shopping. Sellers benefit significantly from internet communications. Therefore, many sellers are willing to bear the burden of convincing buyers that the benefits from internet shopping far outweigh the costs and risks. It is true that these sellers can price their products and services and transfer the costs to the customers. But with competition, that may be less feasible. And more importantly, for the sellers, the cost of proof and risk reduction may be lower than for the consumers, so that even if they transfer some of the costs will be lower. Thus, the internet commerce demonstrates what we've said all along, that verification is the basis for reasonable belief, that reasonable belief is the basis for trusting. Unacceptable cost of verification on the internet may prevent its development as the main form of communication for business and for finance. It seems that those consumers who are not familiar with communicating on the internet are more gullible than they would be in real space. They view experts in internet communication as more trustworthy. Here is something like a reverse order. Expertise produces dependency. Dependency produces trust. Traditional policing and enforcement against illegal action is also a bit weaker, at least now, on the internet. But the internet offers added enforcement tools, including vast applications and automated monitors, and we may find that it becomes more and more effective. Researchers found that groups sharing areas of interest or values or ideas can build trust relationships among themselves, sometimes to the exclusion or even against others. Anonymity, funnily enough, may help shy people to be more truthful. We experience sharing somebody's secrets on a ship or a plane ride, knowing that we will probably never see each other again. Perhaps associations of internet consumers may develop to share information about products, services, their own experiences. Such associations may help reduce the risks to buyers. People who personally sell and buy on the internet can create personal business reputations, especially if there is a mechanism that publishes their performance, as eBay experience has proved. The lower the cost of publication and third-party involvement makes this information powerful and helps create reputations fairly quickly. Sellers on the internet recognize the need to establish trusting relationships with buyers by proof of trustworthiness or proof of facts and promises. They use both, and they do that in different ways. Those who are trusted in real space, for example, community banks with loyal followers, can establish similar relationships on the internet. Sometimes, brick and mortar enterprises that have the loyalty and trust of their customers become aligned with internet enterprises. One reason for such alignment is to bestow on the larger, sometimes larger internet enterprises, the trust of the retailer's customers. This arrangement is similar to franchising, but franchising not of expertise or quality of goods, franchising of trust. Because customers' impersonal trusting of enterprises is harder to obtain and develop, the value of brand names has arisen on the internet. I speculate that this may be one important reason why trademark owners are so concerned about their trademarks, and well-known brand names have acquired special protection by the United States Congress. Some risks for consumers exist in real space, but on the internet, they are magnified. One of the greatest risks to consumers from trusting is the misuse of personal information, personal habits, credit cards, social security, and investment account numbers. Businesses misuse the information they receive either to enhance their own businesses or as a source of income by selling the information to others. Misuse of personal buying habit, credit cards, other information about consumers is more serious on the internet because the internet offers massive information that can, with the aid of computer and experts, be converted into personalized sales. And although some consumers may like the personal sales, others, many others, object to the invasion of their privacy and their private purchase patterns. In addition, by selling information about customers to other businesses, the customers are exposed to avalanche of sales pressures, and they have other, that poses other personal risks of injury to them. So sellers who view the sale of customers' list as part of the expected revenue begin to realize that if they wish to interact on the internet, they may have to forgo this revenue. Sellers on the internet now promise customers not to abuse the information that the customers give them. They may ask permission for such use. That requires customers' trust, since there's no way to prove that the promise will be kept. Provide sellers with credit cards and other information are exposed to additional risks that the information will be stolen, and that it will be then used to steal their assets. Under the United States law, if stolen credit cards are used to charge for unauthorized purchases, consumers are subject only to a $50 payment. The banks or the sellers are liable for the rest. But on the internet, consumers may not know that their card numbers have been stolen. They may still hold the cards. If the thieves change the account address and the consumers are not careful to notice that they didn't get their bills, consumers may not notify the banks of the loss of the cards and be charged with the bills and lose their credit rating if they don't pay. Businesses are hurt too. Credit card thieves have tried to extort payments from businesses from whom they stole the cards of the customers. And when the businesses refused, they published the card numbers. The internet allows easy access and therefore easy dissemination of information. You can inundate people with email and clog their systems. Now, the next rational step happened only recently when the use of such methods resulted in bottlenecks and crashing of services. That has become known as denial of service, hurting both consumers and businesses. In addition, internet enables third parties to maliciously misinform by lies, by gossip, against individuals, against businesses, and we see an increasing number of incidents of this sort. And finally, there are the bad apples. Internet opens the door to many more businesses. Some require relatively small initial capital. And this is welcome. It's a welcome development. But if some of the newcomers, as well as the old-timers, are dishonest, they can deplete the wealth of social trusting that society and most businesses have developed. How are these problems solved? How are they addressed? As to the problem of payment systems, experts suggest that some form of payment should be avoided on the internet, for example, debit cards. They resemble cash and are too risky. Processes that may have to change, for example, the process by which credit cards are settled. Credit card transactions that follow the real-world process from merchant to a merchant processor, then to the credit card association, expose the parties to risk from thieves. A safer approach is to let the merchant directly query the credit card issuing bank for payment authorization. Now, non-technical solutions are also recommended, such as the use of employees to respond to possible threats and risks, and the hiring of experts. Businesses are developing technical protections against third-party attacks on internet business through technical solutions software. These include anti-spamming software and filters against denial-of-service attacks. Most companies have installed mechanisms to protect web transactions. Internal controls are developed against invasion and theft of data. Businesses are changing the payment system for online shopping. They are using digital certificates, eliminating the need to send card account information over the internet. There is a digital identity service and technical forms of authentication that help reduce the risk to consumers. Businesses that suffer from misinformation that frightens customers away use trusted sources to combat misinformation. The important point is that corrections came from trusted sources. And of course, some businesses don't disclose the problems they had, simply correct them. One advisor said, winning customers' trust is no longer by cutting prices, but by offering services. That seems to me to mean that access to the businesses must be easy. But in addition, businesses are advised that their best advertising is actual services which they provide. Put differently, businesses must offer customers proof that what they say is true and what they promised will be fulfilled. In addition, the site and the brand are now the alternative salesperson. The site has become the contact point with the customer. There is no other, just that. There are technical means to prove quality. Pictures shown on the internet can be digitally changed, and there is a trusted third party assuring that the color of products on the internet matches the color of products that customers will get. For example, women's clothes. The truth has become an advertising approach. Another way in which businesses are advised to create trust is to post their privacy statements on the websites and promise to abide by them. And to render such policy statements trustworthy, the statements should be detailed, defining precisely how personal information will be used. Businesses are advised to support their privacy statement by sound policies and systems to ensure compliance. We are witnesses on the internet an increased use of the familiar real space techniques. Information is offered to trusted experts as to facts such as rating bonds, verifiers of promises such as trust packages. There are third-party intermediaries that offer trust services for internet businesses such as escrow services to ensure that buyers pay money in advance, but that the money reaches the sellers only upon delivery. Like reputation building in real space, there are reputation building of businesses through associations. The United States government offers verification in a negative sense about those who are not trustworthy. The Federal Trade Commission issues consumer alerts on line website. Other associations issue positive recommendations about businesses who act on the internet similar to better business bureaus. Among them are the Center for Democracy and Technology, the sign Trustee. To assure customers, some businesses have joined societies such as Financial Services Technology Consortium. Here are competitors who combine to create the public good that is trustworthiness. The law in support of trust on the internet is in its infancy. In the United States, there are congressional and state actions. Courts are dealing with some issues. I wonder whether the new judicial theories will be developed and whether fiduciary law will be used against sellers, for example, who misuse information provided by customers. It is likely that attitude towards hackers who destroy other people's property may also change. While creativity, which they show, can be encouraged, should be encouraged, maybe the law should interfere to reduce creative destruction. Businesses are also resisting government interference, for example, in protecting privacy. They argue for self-regulation to avoid building a bureaucracy. We must wait and see whether businesses will be able to enforce self-regulation and to what extent, if any, government should interfere. On the internet today, consumers trust businesses less than they do in real space. Consumers behave in a non-trusting manner. They protect themselves by requiring proof. Not surprisingly, consumers seek to do it themselves. And immediately you have experts who give them advice concerning how to buy online. Get information about sellers, make sure about warranties, check the security of your credit card, other account numbers that you offer. Do it yourself. Check whether you want to order by telephone. Educate yourself on the risks involving the internet. On the other hand, businesses also attempt to gain trust, and they have consultants, experts, advisors, and seminars on how to do that. The cost of mistrust is high for both parties and will remain until reasonable belief is established. Not all transactions will be executed on the internet. Specific proof will hopefully lead to trust in those who make the statements and the promises. There are a number of questions on the horizon. Today, buyers have alternatives to internet in real space. They also are used to inconvenience of real space. What will happen if the internet becomes the main interaction format, similar to that of the telephone? What will happen there if there are fewer options for real space buying? Well, I can speculate. If businesses abuse their monopolistic positions on the internet, governments are likely to interfere. And of course, consumers will prefer real space, and other businesses will rise to the opportunity and meet the demand. The internet will shrink. In any event, real space will not disappear. Just the small boutique stores did not completely disappear with the rise of the supermarkets. Will the internet continue to be battered by destructive actions of hackers and protective reaction of other hackers? Is there a way in which destruction can be avoided without hurting the creativity of people? Should industry hire them to give them an incentive? Perhaps we will go through a period where large organizations will protect themselves through intranets, as they already exist today. Perhaps industries will organize such intranets both as protection against hackers and to acquire customers' trust in industries as such. Finally, there's the issue of building norms, or better still, what is called meta-norms. These are norms that members of the communities themselves enforce. For example, incest, the prohibition against incest, is a meta-norm. Parking in a forbidden area is not, even though such parking is not good behavior. How can we instill in people, communities, and internet users respect for the medium, an understanding and education of children from an early age about the value of the medium? How can we do that and also give them an understanding of the prohibition for its destruction? A few words, last words, about your group paper. As mentioned in our first session, I hoped that participants in this discussion series would take the advantage of an opportunity to work together on the internet. It is difficult, yet it is very beneficial to develop a draft by a team. So here are some suggestions. First, do not get hung on a topic. You will find that almost every topic somebody suggests will offer an opportunity for a rich display of ideas. Some of you are working on an academic thesis, others are writing in this area, yet others have unique experience in trust. I'm sure that they will find worthwhile topics. Second, decide on a format. You may wish to consider a debate or a statement and providing arguments for or against. Decide what kind of a format you want. Also, decide on a process. You may wish to pick a manager, an editor, or provide editing suggestions by each of you. And of course, please write the paper and post it. I hope that the Berkman Center can then post all your papers on the website. I'm looking forward to reading them. Thank you.